I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one that can...
Yo. Welcome back to another episode of the Fit Sports Podcast right here with your homeboy, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. This is the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. And y'all know we come straight from the South as we bring y'all this sports news, the sports entertainment, the way we do barbershop talk style. So I don't want to waste no time. I want to go ahead and get straight into it because this is my Life After Sports segment. And for if you're a new listener, I use my Life After Sports segment to I bring on people who've played at advanced levels of football or any sport that they played in and was able to find success in life after sports. And the reason I do this is I grew up in environments, areas, and communities where we believe sports was the only thing that we had that we could do as adults. And with this Life After Sports segment, we're learning that sports is a means to an end. Sports isn't the end. So, hey man, this is a great interview. I'm happy to have this gentleman on. This is one of my good homeboys. Like when I say homeboy, I mean homeboy. We've been playing ball together, football together. We played football since middle school. One of the best athletes I've ever met in my life. He can throw it. He can run it. He can catch it. He can do everything on the field, on the court, on the diamond. This one of these people that's just a natural athlete and can just do anything. He played arena ball. He went on to become a coach, a high school coach, and he's using all of his experience, all of his talent, all of his information to help kids get to college. And I see him on a daily basis as he posts his information as a coach. He posts it on social media. I'm seeing him help high school kids who may not have had a chance to get to college So I want everybody to put your hands together. My homeboy, Mr. Bruce Fennell Jones. Y'all put your hands together, man.
Yo.
What up?
Yes,
what up?
My God. Man, everything all right, man. Trying to make it, man. It's a blessing to be on your show, man. Hey, thank you for reaching out to me.
No problem, man. It was something that had to happen, man. Because I looked around at how many homeboys that I had were, like, coaching and doing so many great things in sports. And I was like, hell, I got this sports podcast. So I really created this segment for y'all, man. So I can get people on here who can really give a lot of good information. I'd interview Erica Cromartie. I'd interview Kezia Conyers, Justin Hill, Jarrell Webb, like different folk that we know we came up with but are doing excellent things in the community, man. So the pleasure, I'm appreciative to have you on here, man.
Oh, man, you know, like I said, it's a blessing. And all them people you just named, you know, I watch them, I followed them, I played with them. We had some type of, you know, we had some type of run-ins together. Like, you know, a lot of them guys, Sammy Knight, like, man, legend, mm-hmm. man. You got to get these guys on there, Sammy Knight, legend, you know, Bertrand's House. All these guys need to be on there. You know, like, we just had so much talent, man. Like, you know, everybody that basically went to Rutgers, like, good. Marcus Hall, legends. You know, like, these guys, 6'2", 6'3", running 4'5", playing safety. You know, like, I mean, it's just so much talent we had at Rutgers, and it's great to see a lot of them guys, you know, still involved with football coaching and stuff like that. You know, we just was loaded with talent.
Yeah, we were. Like, I tell people that all the time, and that's another reason why I'm glad you're on here, because, you know, I talk a lot about our record stage and the things that we did on that field. And, hell, you were there. You were out there with us. So you understand. You can validate a lot of the things that's been said. But before we get deep into that, before we get to that part, I want to kind of – like, I know your background information, but for my listening audience, man, can you give them some background information about yourself, who you are, and how you first got involved with sports?
Like, Bruce Pinnell, that was my name, but they switched it to Jones now, but everybody know me by Bruce Pinnell. So Bruce Pinnell, I've been playing quarterback, you know, since part one of days, quarterback and receiver. Went to Rutgers High School. Played a little ball at Rutgers. I ain't had the best high school career because I was a knucklehead. I ain't have a best high school career, but I played. I played with the best. I played with Sammy Knight. I was out there with Bert. I was with Bert Tez House. I was with Mike Fisher. We still talk 2 times a week. I was with Kendrell. I was out there. And back in those days, Antonio Carter, you know, Devin, them boys was lighting that field up, you know. So them guys, legends through there. But I was out there, and I was throwing the ball 75 yards, accurate, running the 4-5. I learned how to play the quarterback position from my guy out of my neighborhood, Nate Bradford, Johnny Holmes, a.k.a. Puka, Enrique Hall. And when Willie Simmons used to come work out at Rutgers, I used to work out with him and Deontay Fagg back in 98-99. So I had all the intangibles. I had those intangibles, fast, accurate, and could throw that ball. So I just was an athlete. So after high school, I took a little time off because in 2002 I had my first daughter. You know what I'm saying? I had my first daughter. So I was like, man, I got to get back on that field. So they wanted me to come play some JUCO ball like in 06. So I went to Minnesota 06, 07, balled out. So I had a full scholarship ride to the Minnesota Golden Gophers. But as soon as I was getting ready to lock that in, the head coach, Glenn Mason, he got fired. So just like everybody else, all the ball players, we got to play arena ball. So I just bounced around on arena teams. I played, you know, I played for like 4 different arena teams. I was in Utah. I played for the Oregon Knights. I played for the Sioux City Bandits. I played for the Dayton Silverbacks in Dayton, Ohio. So it's like I just bounced around. Played ball, got them, did all that. Played, dominated, did all that. So life after football, I'm getting older. I need to find a job. I got kids. So, you know, God bless me. I got a government job. I work for the post office now. So I got a government job, and God just kept blessing me. I got something to give back to the kids. Now I got offered a coaching position. I coach an hour from Detroit in Michigan, Port Huron Northern High School. I'm the wide receiver coach, recruiting coordinator, and now I just help kids get in school. As me coming from an urban area, I could dig into it. I could show the kids what they need to do right to be successful. I could take a knucklehead kid, and I could show him if he don't get right, what road he going down and what he going to lead up to. So it's just a great balance because I get to work with both types of kids. And I like changing life.
That's cool. So, because I like to paint a picture of your experiences and things so people can be able to understand that as we go. So Rutgers High School. Now, before that, I remember – that first year when we played City League ball, we were still in middle school. That seventh grade year, you was our quarterback on our Mesa team. And I know the second year, Tony Camardi was the quarterback. But playing City League and transitioning to high school, and then you the starting quarterback on our high school team. You handing that ball to Mike Fisher, I think, who was me and Sam Dixie and Doc Love. We were receivers.
Chaka Hutchinson too.
Yes, Chaka, definitely. Yeah, you're right, because Chaka hurt his back that year. Definitely right.
Yep.
So, going, like, what was your, like, go into your high school football experience and then kind of tell us, because you said you was knucklehead as well, so kind of help us see where you were like as a football player and kind of how you some of the choices that you made that kind of steered you away from high school football.
All right, so what I mean by knucklehead in high school, I'm from Lake Bradford. I play football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm throwing the ball 75 yards. I'm running a 4.56 40-yard dash. I got all the athletic ability in the world, but I ain't want to come to class. I don't want to come to class. I'm thinking my athletic ability will get me there. You know, I had good people trying to help me out. Sam Carter, he's talking to me, hey, Bruce mm-hmm. Pinnell, you need to do this. But I had so much stuff going on. You know, I thought I knew what I was doing, but I didn't. You know, I had football players. I had Slugger. I had all the guys talking to me, telling me, hey, Bruce, man, do this, do that. But like I said, the athletic ability, it was there. It's too easy, you know, because once again, and I'm going to keep shouting this dude out because every time I go home, I got Johnny Holmes, a.k.a. Pookie, from Lake Bradford. He throwing that ball 80 yards. He working with me on accuracy and everything right on Warwick Street in the street.
Right.
I got all the accountables from a neighborhood. I got everything from a neighborhood legend. But then I got it from Rike Hall, a Rutgers High School lesson. Rike Hall was my JV coach.
Right. And so, yeah, man. And like Rike did a real, real good job of teaching the quarterback position. Because I remember not just with you, but with Will Gate. Because after you was the quarterback, Will Gay was the quarterback. And so, all right, man, so how did, like, knowing you have all this ability, knowing you got all this talent, and not being able to play, like, what was going through your mind, what were some of the feelings and emotions that you had as a high school player who probably one of the top five athletes, easily one of the top five athletes in the city, but you can't play, so how did you feel at that time? What were some of the thoughts going through your head?
I thought I had made a big mistake. I was kicking myself in the butt because I knew I was that dude, but I couldn't really get on the field for a couple of years, a few times because I ain't had no grades. So I said to myself, I got to figure out a way to bounce back. And like I said, 2002, I had my first daughter. I had my first daughter, Nikisa, 2002. So now I gotta put all this in perspective. I gotta be a great daddy. So now I gotta get a job. I gotta work. I gotta support for this kid, for my child. I gotta support for my child. But I still had coaches. I want you to come play JUCO ball. I want you to come play JUCO ball. And you know, at first I'm like, man, I'm done with football. I'm done. But then I had good people talking to me, man, Bruce, you can't be done. You too raw. So I started back working out. Got back on the field, went to Minnesota. I walked out on faith, went to Minnesota. Played up there for 2 years, JUCO ball, and like I said, it was history. I got the love back for it, and I played ball, balled out, and I just...
So, okay, that's what's up. So let me ask this, because you got to JUCO, so what process happened, like, who helped you get the JUCO? Who called somebody? Did somebody call you, or did somebody put some tape out? Like, how did that happen?
Well, I'm going to be real. In Tallahassee, Big Unc helped me, Tony T.C. Collins. Tony T.C. Collins from Lincoln High School. T.C., hey, boy, you need to go to JUCO. Tony T.C. Collins reached out to me. That's like an uncle today. We still talk 2 times a week. David Harley from Lincoln, all them guys, we still talk 2-3 times a week. But Tony T.C. Collins, that's who got me to JUCO. He said, man, you got too much talent, man. You need to go to JUCO. He offered for me to go to Santa Monica in California with Sam and them, but I couldn't do it. I didn't want to lead a baby at that time to go that far. But after a while, I got over it, and I went to junior college in Minnesota. But Tony T.C. Collins, he put me up on the junior college. He wanted me to go.
Okay. Now, because that's important because now I know things are a bit different now because we got YouTube and all that, all these other hubs that high school athletes can use. Like, because we didn't really know too many tools or any tools at all to help us get to college other than just trying to be good and hopefully the coaches help us. But you were lucky enough to have some coaches who actually helped you get to junior college. So, all right, so now you in Minnesota. So you're a black dude from the south side, west side of Tallahassee, Lake Bradford Road, black neighborhood in Tallahassee, Florida, for those who don't know. Our neighborhood. We from the Bradford. So What was going through your mind like when you first touched down? What was your experience in Minnesota? How was that being up there and playing JUCO ball? What did you experience?
First time I got there, Joe, being from Florida, I say, what the hell I did? Man, I get out there. I get out there, man. There's trees everywhere. I'm in the middle of nowhere. I see people driving tractors in the middle of the street. I'm like, man, this is crazy. I'm in the middle of nowhere. And like I said, at that time, it ain't no huddle. You barely got YouTube. It ain't none of that. It ain't no rivals.
Right.
It ain't none of that stuff. You had Nike camps back in the days, and you had to pay to go to them, and my mama ain't got it. She can't afford it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We can't afford that. So, but when I got to Minnesota, it was different. Like I said, you had one grocery store. It's called a come and go. You got one grocery store. It ain't nothing going on. It ain't nothing going on. First couple, I was homesick. I want to go home.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go home. And I tell any young athlete out there right now, JUCO ain't no JUCO. That's tough because everybody good. You got people from California.
Right.
You got people from Texas, Georgia, Florida. Everybody good. You might be number one in Tallahassee. They number one in Miami. They just ain't got no grades.
Right. Yes. I think we learned a lot of that from watching that Last Chance U. But you were able to, you know, you experienced that firsthand, and you were like a lot of other people telling me about your JUCO experience. Like it's some good ball players out there. But like you said, the biggest factor is they don't have no grades. Yeah, man. So,
no grades.
Go ahead.
I say, yeah, they ain't got no grades. Everybody good. I mean, everybody good from their city. No grades. You going to get tried. First time I came down the first couple games, I ain't touched the field. Man, they had a 5'9 quarterback who ran a 4'8 and couldn't throw playing over me because he was a hometown kid. That's adversity.
Mm-hmm.
I had to back him up. I just had to back them up. I had to wait my chance before I could touch the field. You know, we had coaching changes. Like, it's a tough transition when you go JUCO. You ain't eating no free meals. You barely eating one free. I'm eating noodles. I eat noodles 2-3 times a week. You ain't got no meal plan.
Right.
We ain't have no meal plan.
Right. So you basically, like, were you – did anybody, like, prepare you in any kind of way to go to JUCO, or you just had to get it off the muscle, learn on the cuff while you was up there?
I had to get it off the muscle. I'm the type of person, I'm still like that now at the age of 37. I go off opportunity. I got it off the muscle. Only thing you got to do is give me one opportunity. Now, if I mess it up, I mess it up. I don't blame nobody. I don't blame nobody on my mistakes. I'm just going to go off opportunity. I'm going.
Right. So how many games did you go into the city, into the season before you eventually became a starter? Or did you have to, like, back him up for a full season?
Man, I had to back my man up for about 5 games because he's a hometown hero. They trying to get him D1.
Okay.
I'm telling the coach, man, how you going to go D1 at 5'9 playing quarterback?
Right.
And ain't better than me. And he ain't better than me. He 5'9". He can't run a throw. So people just was, man, Bruce need to be the starter. Bust him out in practice. Then it was a wrap then. It was a wrap.
That's cool. But I'm glad you hit on – you recognize that adversity and you ain't run from it. See, that's that late Bradford in you. That's that Rickards. And you know, we don't run from challenges. We run to challenges. So definitely on that.
Yep.
So you say from JUCO, you had a chance to go to the University of Minnesota. Before that fell out, like, how did that get hooked up? Like, were they coming to the games, or did somebody reach out to them?
September 15, 2006, 2007, Glenn Mason, that was the head coach for the Gophers back then in 06, 07, he came to my homecoming game. I think I threw for about 200 and some yards, a couple touchdowns against Rochester, and we lost. But after the game, he talked to me and my guy named Javon Hill. He's from Fort Lauderdale. He's a DB, and he said he was going to offer us after the season. But after the season, he got dismissed from the coaching job, and I was stuck. So now I'm like, whoa, what I'm supposed to do? At this time, I got David Harley, I got Buddy, I got Tripp, all them guys from Lincoln. I'm talking to them, James White, we all talking.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to play arena ball. You need to play arena ball. Like, all them guys I named, and even more, we talk at least once or twice a week, like Buddy. I still keep in contact with Buddy, Tripp, Mike Fisher, David Harley. James White. I talk to these guys all the time, right now. So everybody was going the JUCO route. I mean, everybody's going arena route because you thought you could make it to the league playing arena football. So I ain't gonna sit on your podcast and lie. I went to a couple teams where they ran a system. It was hard for me to learn the system. I ain't make it. Uh-huh. But then I went to a couple teams where when I got on that thing, I tore that thing up. I also went to one team that when I went to the team, as soon as I got to the team, they lied. They ain't had the money to pay me. I was sleeping on somebody's floor. The more adversity, it was the same thing in arena football because they were starring teams, but they ain't had no money to start the team. So I went through all that.
Right.
But I had my glitch 2011 when I was in Dayton, Ohio. Like, once again, another hometown hero playing quarterback. After the third game, I took his spot, and it was a wrap. But arena football, you could be on this team this year. Next year, you could be on another team. It worked like that.
Right. So, yeah, because we never really hear the background story of playing arena ball. We always see it from the TV. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the Tallahassee Titans, when the arena team hit the Tallahassee Titans was created. You know, Fish was on that team, Black Mark was on that team, a couple other cats that we know that was on that team. Frank Porter, Coach Porter, that coached the receivers at Rickards, he was like consulting and working with the team. And at the time, me and Caleb was making music. And we actually had a chance to make the theme song and, like, the soundtrack for the Tallahassee Titans.
Uh-huh.
But in doing that, we learned about the business of it because, like you said, that was a team who didn't have no money, and the season fell apart, like, in the middle of the season because they ain't had no damn money.
Yep. So, it fall apart. You got coaches had you come out there, coming all the way from Florida. Hey, I'm gonna give you $1,000 a game. I'm gonna give you $500 a game. You get that, they give you 60. What? 60? I got kids. It don't work. You know, you just gotta find the right fit for you. Like when Marcus them was at Tallahassee, like Marcus Harley, ball player. Mm-hmm. My boy Cha Cha Berry, we just talked two nights ago from Quincy, Shane, ball player. Them guys was loaded down there, but a lot of them guys ain't get paid.
Right. Yeah, I saw that firsthand. Like we saw that firsthand with the Tallahassee Titans. Like the guy who brought the team didn't have the money that he proposed that he had, that he told people that he had, and it threw a whole lot of stuff off. So, yeah, man. So, all right. So how many total years did you play arena ball?
I want to say about 4 or 5. I want to say 4 or 5.
Okay.
About four or five years. Yep.
Okay. So at what point did you come to the realization that you were coming to the end of your time playing arena ball? Like at what point did that kind of hit you?
Well, to be honest with you, talking to the kids, being away from my kids, you know, can't get to them when I want to, and you know, you just seeing the game, the business start to go shady. Like you done won a starting position in practice. They bring somebody in off the street that they coach, and he start over you. Then you just like, okay, I'm done with this. You know, so it all boils up like coaches owing you money. You know, coaches lying to you, all that stuff. I just was done with it. So I was like, hey, it's done. It's time for me to give it up. I had a good career. I played. I did a good job. I got good fam. You know, it's done. It's time to give it up. You know, and then it was just even harder and harder to get to the CFL or the NFL because the ultimate goal mm-hmm. was to get to the CFL or the NFL. Like, me and Sammy Knight was talking every night just about telling him, hey, boy, you killing it down there in Louisiana. He's telling me,
right.
Hey, boy, you killing it up there in Ohio. Fred Cromartie, he was one of my receivers, Fred Cromartie, when I was in Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We lit that thing up. But we all had the same goal, was to pray somebody gave us a chance to get a workout to the NFL or the CFL, but it ain't never happened.
Right. Now, and because, you know, ultimately, man, that was all of our goals. I mean, because think about, bro, the level of talent that we was around, like you've been hitting on the whole show. From if we combine like Lincoln, Godby, and just Lincoln, Godby, and Rickards. If we could just think about those three schools and the talent that came out between the years of 98 and 2002. Like Tallahassee players should be littered. Like, the NFL should be littered with Tallahassee players. It should be. It just didn't work out that way. And that's the reality of the sport. And that's why I do this show, for the reality of the sport. Also, because I see a lot of kids who are placed in positions where the family are putting it on them to save the family. And no 12-year-old kid should have the burden of saving their family through athletics, you know?
Right. So, right. You need to be telling – you need –
go ahead.
I said, right, yeah, he shouldn't have a burden to try to save the family. They need to be telling him, hey, you know, what you going to do in football if you don't make it in football? What's your backup plan? That's something I ain't
right.
have. I ain't have a backup plan. I wanted to make it to the league so I could buy my mama a big house. That was always my dream. But I ain't have
right.
a plan. You know, I ain't have a plan. I just knew I was good. I ain't have no type of plan, but I knew I was good. I knew I could lace up the cleats and run a 4.5 high, mid 4.5 high 4.4, and I knew I could throw a football 70 yards in accurate, throw between coverage, and I
right.
could read a defense. I know that.
Right, right. Okay, so let me ask you this, and I'm asking you this based off of my experience as well, because when football was over for me, I would say it wasn't until I graduated college and started actually working in the real job that I found my niche. I found, like, other things, because I just believe football wasn't necessarily my purpose, but it was another means to an end. But I found my niche, though. It took a while. I say it took about seven, eight years for me to find my niche, man, because after football, I was lost for a while. And then I was just like, let me just graduate college. I don't really know what I want to do. I know I want to work for myself, but I don't really know. So how long did it take you to find your niche or find a career or even find confidence in yourself to know that you can do more than athletics?
That's a good question too, Joe. That's a real good question. Ain't nobody never asked me that. I want to say at least took me probably about, because I was content. At first, I ain't making it in football. I'm going to be around. I'm going to be hanging out. I'm just going to hang out and just enjoy the life in the city. So one day, I went to church. The preacher just preaching, but he talking about me, and he don't even know me.
Uh-huh.
Everything he talking about, it come back to me. So I want to say, to answer your question, I want to say possibly about 7 or 8 years after all that.
Right.
At least 6 or 7 years to get where I want to be. You know, I just kind of changed stuff for the better. You know, I want to just put myself in some situations where I could put myself around the right people. Not saying it's nothing wrong with anybody, but, like, some people do this, I don't do this. So I'm going to put myself around people that could help me. That's the biggest thing. You want
right.
to put yourself around people that could help you, and it don't have to be financially, but they could help you, like, hey, you know, I know somebody that own this business. They can help you in other avenues to get where you're trying to go. Cause you gotta think, I'm from the slum. I ain't used to getting no help. I mean, I might get a little
right.
help, but people don't help you like they supposed to in the city. How, you know what I'm saying? Like, where we from? You know, some people out for themselves. You got good people, but most of everybody out for themselves. You know what I'm saying? Everybody ain't helping
right.
everybody like that.
Right. Now, you're right. Yeah, I mean, because like I said, I always try to ask that, make sure I ask that question, and I'm delicate with how I ask it, because I know everybody's experience is different, but once again, I think about myself, where I was lost. Like, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I would sit up there and think all the time. So, you know, like me and Caleb, we tried rapping. Rapping just didn't work out for us. The business of it, we didn't understand it. We could flow, but it just didn't understand. We just didn't understand the business. So after that, we were always trying little. We were tinkering with little things here and there as far as entrepreneurial wise. But getting around Sam Carter, I always say, and you know, I tell him all the time, Sam Carter helped me get on track. Sam Carter helped me figure out what I want to do in life and what I can do in life, what all I bring to the table, just by giving me a chance. So So with that being said, who gave you a chance to become a high school coach? Like, how did that start? What was the process? What were the different steps? And from where you were when you started to where you are now, but, you know, who gave you that chance, though?
Well, let me just double back one quick second. Sam Carter, that's the man. That's the go-to man.
Yes,
when I was down and out, and I was in when I was down and out, Sam Carter came. I could remember Sam Carter came on Lake Avenue off Lake Bradford where I was, and had a he was getting a haircut, and he had a 20-minute conversation with me. Like, man, you got too much talent, Bruce Pinnell. Man, what you doing out here? Come on, man. He came to the area and talked to me. Like, man, come on, Bruce Pinnell. Sam always got love for me. I mean, I always got love for Sam Carter. Sam Carter, stand-up guy. But to answer the question, so I'm in Michigan. I'm at Michigan, so I'm like, you know, I want to coach. So I had my football resume. So I had my football resume, and I, you know, my stuff that what I did and where I played at and stuff. So I want to say my head coach. I mean, like, my head coach, of course, is his team. Well, I had to volunteer to coach JV for like a year or two because, you know, I'm doing this in Florida. We in Michigan, not you know me. So it's a different ball game. I don't care what you did. I don't care if you go from Florida to Oklahoma. You in Oklahoma now. So, you know, I had to volunteer for 2 years. A great staff, you know, great for staff, a young coach, you know, but he know his stuff. He's a former quarterback, too. I mean, Bob Kearns, though, the offensive line coach, baseball coach, you know, he embraced me, you know, took me on his wings and everything. You know, he let me coach with him on JV. I was the quarterback coach, receiver coach. It started JV because most of the time if you're trying to coach high school football, you ain't going to start off on varsity. You might have played in the NFL, but you might be a JV coach. So it ain't guaranteed that you're gonna coach varsity. That's what people need to know. It's what they need you at. If they might be like, hey, you was a star at Florida State. I offer you a high school head coaching job for a JV team. I mean, hey, it's still high school football. So with me, like I said, I had to just I just jump on opportunity. He's like, hey, you could come coach with me JV. I came to coach with him JV. I coached a year of freshman. And ever since then, it was varsity. I was varsity 2017. 2017 was my first year on varsity. We went 6-4. Division two, first round playoffs, we lost. 2018. We went 8-1. You know, went to the regionals. We went regionals, and we lost. And we lost in regionals. 2019, we went 8-1. We lost the first round of the playoffs. You know, so ever since then, I've just been a varsity coach since like 2016-17.
That's what's up. Because the transition you made from coaching, I mean, from where you were when we. Think about from Messer Field to where you are now. That's a hell of a transition. That's a hell of a ride. A hell of a story you have. Like you faced all type of adversity, and you still here. Like you thriving through the adversity because you could have said fuck it, and just kept going on doing what you was doing in the streets. You could have given up on yourself when you faced adversity in JUCO. You could have gave up. Adversity in the arena. Like you could have gave up adversity any time after football, but you didn't. And now you are making a impact in other kids' lives. So do you know off the top like how many kids that you've from your program that has went to college since you've been on the staff?
I want to say, let's see. And I know for a fact in 3 years we had nine go this year. Nine kids go to school this year in 1 year. 2018, I want to say I had two. I mean, yeah, 13. I want to say I probably had 13 kids in 3 years go somewhere. In 3 years, probably 13. And I still got friends in Florida like who I know they kids that, you know, I still help them too. If they need help trying to get in somewhere, I still help them. My job just to help the kids. I want to see you going to the next level. But here's the thing where it get tricky at. Everybody can't play D1. Everybody can't play that. These kids got it wrong. Everybody can't play it. Some of the best ballers come from Division II programs. But since I played with those type of guys and we played that ball, I know a Division I kid. Everybody can't play Division I. My job is to make sure you go get a free education. I don't care where you play at, Division II, NAIA, JUCO, long as you go to school and you go, as long as you get a shot to go play somewhere, go play.
There you go. Nah, that's real. Like, man, I wish we would have known better. Man, like we was talking the other day, man, like we know about Idaho State, San Diego State, some of these schools and these other places, we could have been playing actual college football. You know, I ended up, I'm not mad. I'm over it that I went to FAMU because I learned some valuable things at FAMU. But just sometimes we sit back and think, like me, Doc, and Caleb would be like, man, we could have went to such and such school and been able to play ball. So what's the greatest lesson that you've learned from, like I say, from just thinking about from when you first start playing organized tackle football, Mesa Field, or even out there in the streets to where you are now as a coach? What's the greatest lesson that football has taught you?
The greatest lesson football taught me was just, you know, I mean, just, I think, don't be afraid of opportunity. And I say that, like, from football, the football standpoint of view, like, don't be afraid of opportunity, because opportunity could be right there in your face and you pass it up. Because if it didn't take for me to walk out on faith and leave Florida and go to Minnesota, leave Florida and go to Ohio, I wouldn't be where I'm at now with a little bit of faith. So I just say keep faith and don't be scared of opportunity and don't be scared to face adversity. That's what I tell you. That I still live on those same morals today.
That's what's up. Nah, that's what's up, man. And this is my last question for you. If 37-year-old Bruce had a chance to go talk to, let's say, 14, 15, maybe 16-year-old Bruce who's still in high school, who's still on the team, what advice would you give your younger self to help you make sure you do what you need to do to stay within organized football for that long? Because I believe if you would have remained on these teams, you would have been definitely one of the ones who would have went D1 and would have shook up college football. So what advice would you give your, like, 16, 17-year-old self?
Go to school, get you a great education, and do something with yourself. That's what I would say. Go to school, take school serious, put sports on the back burner, and have a plan. Cause we ain't have a plan. I just know I'm good in sports. I ain't got no type of plan. And when reality hit me, when I had my daughter, and then I had my other daughter, cause I got two daughters right now. But when reality hit, not a football, you got to back away from that. Cause now you got to support for these kids.
Right.
You got to support. You got to be a father. It's time to be a father now, cause you got kids. So you can't sit there and train 2 and 3 days and go run sprints and stuff. No, you got to go get this job to make this money to take care of these kids. So your priorities kind of change. But I tell that young Bruce, have a plan and just go with it.
All right. Now, that's what's up, man. Like, this, I appreciate you, bro. Like, I really appreciate you, your candidness, your honesty, and, you know, for telling people about yourself. Hey, man, look, I don't know if anybody ever told you this, bro, but you might need to write you a book, bro. Go ahead.
Well, I've been talking to Kezia.
Okay.
Conyers. You know, that's my girl. She got me.
Yeah, man. And I helped her with her book. You know damn well I help you with your book, bro.
All day, so, already. You already know.
Yeah, man. Hey, so what's like if somebody wanna get in contact with you for an interview, they hear this, they wanna interview you, or somebody wanna get more information about football within your area, like what's the best way for people who don't know you to be able to contact you and get information from you?
My email is bjonesphn@gmail.com, and I'm starting my little own football camp called Skills and Drills. skillsanddrills.net. That's how you get in contact with me. bjonesphn@gmail.com. That's my email.
Yes. And then you said skillsanddrills.net.
Yep, skillsanddrills.net.
Okay. All right, that's what's up. Hey, man, once again, bro, like, this is definitely an honor to have you on here. Definitely appreciate you, like I say, from the heart, man. Definitely love you, bro. We've been doing this since middle school, and, I'm proud of you. And any way that I can always help you, man, you know I'm definitely reach out. You let me know, man.
My God, man. Tell the family I say what's up, Joe, man. You know I love you, too. And hit
yes,
me
sir.
Up anytime, baby.
Oh, yeah, man. I got you, man. Definitely.
All right, bro. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir, man. I'm going to hit you up real soon.
All right, Joe. Appreciate it, baby.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right. That, once again, my homeboy Bruce Fennell, man. Coming through, gave some great information, man. Like I knew he was gonna come drop some information. I kind of had a feeling he was gonna do that, cause you know I know him. So, but he did. He definitely came and dropped them jewels. Carlin Mansell Moose, he was dropping them jewels on y'all, man. So, man, y'all check my homeboy out, skillsanddrills.net. Y'all support my homeboy and support all my guests that come on this show. Support everybody. That's what we do right here on this Fix Sports Podcast. You heard me?